I'm Jason Diamond, and my favorite thing is going back to the suburbs outside of Chicago and driving from the suburbs to the city and either going to Calumet Fisheries or a Harold's Chicken.
Welcome to the Finding Favorites podcast, where we explore your favorite things without using an algorithm. Here's your host, Leah Jones.
Hello and welcome back to Finding Favorites. I'm your host, Leah Jones. This is a special week, a double episode week, because my friend Jason Diamond's new book, The Sprawl, is being released on Tuesday, August 25th. So I thought it would be nice to release this in tandem with his book release. Jason and I have known each other. You'll hear us debate how long we've known each other, but we've known each other for at least 10 years, if not longer. And this is his second book. It is called The Sprawl, Reconsidering the Weird American Suburbs. It was published by Coffee House Press. This is Jason's second book. His first one was Searching for John Hughes, which is a beautiful memoir. I'm learning in public on how to be a podcaster. One of the things I have to learn is to make sure that I tell everyone before they show up to the Zoom call what the concept of the podcast is. So I didn't prep Jason for this podcast. I forgot to tell him to pick a thing to talk about. You'll hear the moment when I realize I didn't tell him to pick something. But we start with the music he liked in his 20s, and we go from there. We talk about food, music, romantic comedies, Nora Ephron, driving around Lake Michigan, Chicago restaurants, the mother-in-law sandwich, which I had never heard of before, but now I definitely need to try. So it's just a very fun conversation that is even more meandering, I think, than a normal interview that I've been doing. But it was really fun. Again, you know, like I've really enjoyed doing this podcast because I get to get on Zoom with people that I know casually or that maybe I used to know well and I don't know them well now. And we set aside an hour to an hour and a half to talk. And it has really been a gift during the great pause of COVID to have some long conversations with people that I don't ever have long one-on-one conversations with. And this is one of those things. Like, Jason and I have followed each other on Twitter and have for 10 years. And so we have a high level of acquaintanceship and like we cheerlead for each other. When I worked at an agency that represented MillerCoors beers, Jason has always been in an outlet that needed a shipment of High Life or Coors Light or Miller or Summer Shandy. So I was often Jason's hookup for whatever outlet he worked at, for whatever MillerCoors beers they needed over the years. So I think this is a fun conversation. Like I said, it is maybe less focused, but it's broad, it's fun. And it's just hanging out with two friends on Zoom who wish they were like maybe hanging out at a bar. Anyway, so you should buy a copy of The Sprawl. Again, it's The Sprawl by Jason Diamond, Reconsidering the Weird American Suburbs. Get a copy from your favorite independent bookstore, attend one of his virtual launch events this week and next. I hope that you are able to stay home, stay safe, wear your mask and wash your hands. And of course, enjoy your favorite things. Hello and welcome to Finding Favorites. This is a podcast where we get recommendations and find out about people's favorite things. And we get recommendations without using an algorithm. I am very excited today. We've got Jason Diamond. He is an editor, writer, and journalist based in Brooklyn. How are you doing today, Jason?
I'm doing good. There was a storm earlier this afternoon that it was pretty terrifying, but I think we cleaned up from it pretty fast. So can't complain.
Yeah, I saw some friends on the Upper West Side saying it was like 60 mile an hour winds.
Yeah, it was scary. It was definitely shades of past tropical storms. You know, New Yorkers like to fetch about anything, but especially weather. And I think when you're on Twitter enough, you see New Yorkers, like when anything changes weather-wise in New York, everybody on New York Twitter just starts getting in on it. So, it was pretty intense.
Yeah. But we're talking now, so you've got internet, you've got power.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Yeah, I'm good. Can't complain. Although this conversation is great, but if my internet could get knocked out for a little while, that'd be nice. I could use less time on it.
Right. It just, if nature gives you the gift of an internet free week, it'd be all right.
Yeah, I wouldn't complain. Never, I don't know the last time that ever happened to me, but I would take it.
Yeah, it's not, I can't think of a time other than like moving apartments and I messed up my ComEd order or something. My Comcast order, not my ComEd.
Never in my whole professional life if I had a week without internet. So
yeah,
I don't know what I would do.
Yeah. It's pretty, I don't know. I would just like keep checking, I think. I don't know that I could actually relax into it. I think I would just keep refreshing and seeing if it was working yet.
I feel like there's that episode of The Simpsons where Homer realizes he had like a crayon stuck up his nostril, like hitting his brain, and that's what's making him stupid. So he gets the crayon removed and suddenly he's really smart. I feel like that would be me without the internet.
So, Jason, we know each other from the internet. Mm-hmm. And I think we've probably only met in person maybe one time.
Twice.
Because I came to New York when you put me on the Big Juicy list, which was 10 years ago.
Jeez.
I was fact-checking myself. So it was the summer of 2010 was that list. Can you believe it?
Crazy.
Yeah, so I came to New York because nobody ever put me on. Well, I guess if you're Jewish, you don't want to be put on lists. But it was the first time I'd ever been recognized for like doing cool stuff in the Jewish world. And so I came out for that party and for some other stuff and then like sat in the corner of a bar and was like, oh, these people are all much cooler than me. And I should leave now.
What? People always think that when they get to New York. And I think it's just because New Yorkers can't stop talking.
Right.
And I think it throws people for a loop. I've grown up around New Yorkers, so it's like it's old hat to me, but like everybody I know, especially from the Midwest, I think, you know, Chicago to me is just as amazing as New York, but I think there is something about just being from the Midwest and you have more time to yourself and you have more time to actually engage with people, and mm-hmm. New Yorkers just are,
right.
No stopping.
I also think, though, a lot of people who were there that night are now people I'm super comfortable with.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I thought it was very cool and I really appreciated it. So if I didn't say thank you then, I'm saying thank you now.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. What's the other time we met? I'm
trying to remember. I could be wrong, but I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. I thought there was another time. Was it in Chicago? I feel like.
Oh, right. When your John Hughes book came out, I came to see you at the bookseller.
Right. I knew there was something.
Yeah.
Bookseller is such a great place.
It's such a great place.
Yeah.
I miss hanging out anywhere.
Yeah. It's just such a that's Lincoln Square.
Yeah.
That's just such a cozy neighborhood. Honestly, that might be one of the coziest neighborhoods in Chicago.
I love it.
Yeah, it's great.
I've lived up here I'm in Ravenswood, which is right next to Lincoln Square. Nice. Yeah. So I've been here for 4 years now in a 6-flat, and I love it. I'm across the street from a big park. I can walk to the bookseller. So I love it over here.
I always liked it. Ravenswood is so nice. I remember because you go through Ravenswood on the way when you were going to like when Wrigleyville was cool, you'd go through Ravenswood and it always just looked, you got the expressway and It just looked really nice.
Yeah, it's a nice, it's a really nice mix of housing types. So there's two flats and six flats and like single family homes. So it's a really nice mix of residential. There's more. I'm not a realtor, but I love this neighborhood.
Yeah.
Like the tree rows are bigger. The trees are older versus a Wicker Park, which is just all concrete and a few spindly trees.
I mean, Wicker Park is a weird neighborhood. I mean, I remember going there in like 1994, 95 and just being like, is this what they mean when they say like concrete jungle? Like,
yeah.
That was back when it was still really industrial. I just remember like, I mean, my family's from Rogers Park. So Rogers Park to me was like, oh, everything. And then you go to parts of the South Side that are really nice and leafy. And going to Wicker Park for the first time was kind of a wake up because I was like, oh, this is a city.
And yeah.
That was like around the time when like, I think like Kim Gordon and Thurston Morris and like Wicker Park is the coolest place on the in America. It was kind of like... Yeah.
It was the first when I moved to Chicago, I moved here in 2002 and I started in Wicker Park. Leo's Lunchroom was still open. So it hadn't become the, I mean, now it's just a mall, you know, it's just chains and I don't know who can afford to live in Wicker Park anymore.
So I bought Volumes being there. So, and you know, like they opened up there. I thought that was awesome. And Myopic is still there. And
yeah. Quimby's there. I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can't beat that.
Yeah. We'll see what, you know, the independent bookstores in Chicago seem to be surviving COVID. There's a lot of like really unique ways that people are getting their customers to come through, you know, with mystery boxes or in a couple weeks, I'm on a panel for a virtual book launch event at Women and Children First. So they're still doing their events.
And there's a place in Pilsen. I'm blanking. I love them. Pilsen. It's Pilsen Bookstore. I think they just opened it. They opened right before COVID, I think. And they're doing great stuff. I have one of their bags.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a great city. It's, you know, I miss it all the time. there are only two cities in America to me, and it's New York and Chicago.
So. Yeah. I love it. I went, like we were talking about, I went to my hometown in Indiana this weekend and, I just could never move back.
Yeah. I mean, like I like going to LA. LA is always going to be LA's and I appreciate that. I love Miami. But like, I could never live in either of those places. And like I loved Austin for a long time, but now Austin kind of feels a little bit like Silicon Valley. Well, it's more like San Francisco, Oakland.
Yeah.
So that kind of bums me out a little bit, but
yeah.
Chicago and New York, you know, they'll always change and they'll always be different, but I don't know. Can't get enough of either of those places.
Yeah. So this podcast is where I talk to people about their favorite things. And sometimes I know the topic in advance. And tonight, I don't know the topic at all. So what are we talking about tonight?
Let's see. Talk a lot about food.
I can
talk a lot about books. Talk a lot about records. I don't know. I could talk about pretty much anything. As long as I name something, I could probably riff. I'm a good riffer.
All right. I'm gonna skip movies for now because you did write a whole book about it.
Yeah, thanks.
About one director. So I feel like we'll skip favorite director. But how about, like, what is the music that defined being 20 for you?
Oh, being 20. Oh, my gosh. So I would say 18 to about 21 was just because that was like I grew up and lived in Chicago at that time. And that was around the time when I think Spin magazine called Chicago the Indie City.
Okay.
So it was like, you had to really know your shit. Can I swear? Can I say?
Yes.
Yeah, you had to say. You had to know your shit because you would go to a place like Reckless or, man, what was the other place? The Homewood Record Exchange, was it?
I think.
There was I think that was it. But there was like a bunch of record stores. It was Reckless. There was a place, Record Breakers, I think also. I mean, the people who worked there just didn't care. Like, they didn't want to like be like, you know, they weren't excited about trying to tell you like, oh yeah, you should listen to this. It was like, if you don't know what you're into, you're going to feel like a jerk. So, but 20, by that point, I had been going into the city since I was about 14 to see shows. So gosh, it's so hard to think like what I was, cause like, I feel like I'd gotten past my like snotty pop punk phase when I was
right.
a little kid, gotten past my like really into like hardcore phase in my later teens. So I would say around then I was probably listening to a lot more like, I'm putting it in air quotes, music I would probably have said challenges me.
So does that mean like it was Dead Kennedys because they politically were challenging you or like?
That was like what I listened to. I mean, I still love them, but that was like what I was listening to when I was like 15 or 16. This was more like if it could be like 20 minutes of just some guy bending a note.
Okay.
Or like the Sonic Youth bootleg, you know, just like loud noise stuff was really important to me. And I'd go to Fireside and Empty Bottle because I had a fake ID so I can get an empty bottle back then. But I'd go see like bands like Black Dice and Wolf Eyes, just walls of noise, really like confrontational sounding. That was like, screamy, like it wasn't exactly hardcore, but it was like really screamy, loud, fast stuff. Just like this one band that I loved called The Locust. And another call, like this guy, Justin Pearson, was in all these different bands. They were just all screamy, fast, hardcore stuff. And then like, you know, I'd go home and I'd want to chill out and I'd listen to like Cat Power. I'd listen to Blackheart Procession, more like chilled out indie rock. I basically thought I was a very, I can only listen to certain kinds of like indie rock. Sigur Rós was really me at that time. They had just come out. I think that's when I started really getting into Brian Eno, but like the airport, the ambient stuff.
Yeah.
So they say I was like listening to anything that nobody else would say, yeah, let's listen to that. Sounds great.
Yeah. I think like 18 to 20 for me, like I was in marching band in high school, jazz band. So in high school, it had to be instrumental. So if there were lyrics, I wasn't listening to it unless it was like being played on the college radio alternative show on Sunday nights.
Which one was it? What radio station was that?
Was WISU, Indiana State University's. So my friend Adam was the Sunday night DJ and it was called Alternative Sundays and it was 6 hours of alternative music. And that was the alternative music in town for the week.
Yeah. That was life changing for a lot of people. An hour, like, you know, anybody who had that 1 hour, it was like everything.
Yeah. So that was how I got from thinking They Might Be Giants was alternative to like listening to Jane's Addiction. So by the time I got to college, I was just insufferable. My minor was Spanish. And so there were a few years where I only listened to music that was in Spanish.
Now that's kind of like, you know, if somebody comes over, like, what do you want to listen to? And you play Spanish, Spanish language music. And they're like, I don't know what this is.
Right. Right. Like some Elvis Crespo or an album, like a mixtape of merengue songs. It wasn't even like I had that many CDs or tapes. It was a very small selection, but only in Spanish.
I'm one of those people who have just always been music obsessed. I grew up with a lot of like music was like the one thing that like, you know, my parents like connected with me when it came to like, it was like, that was the only thing that I think got from them a lot. Like they just both liked a lot of music and I mean, you know, I think when I was a kid, I was definitely very genre focused. So it was like, if it isn't punk, I don't like it. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, if it's not hardcore or Tori Amos, which was a weird leap, but a lot of hardcore kids in the late 90s really liked Tori Amos for some reason. I wasn't alone. But I just definitely for like from like 14 to about 19, like edge of 20, those 5 years, I was just so genre focused.
And, yeah.
You know, like if you listen to ska at all, you were a ska kid to me. If you listen to any kind of emo, you were an emo kid to me. And I think that's it's a very like late Gen X, early millennial kind of way of thinking. But, you know, like alternative, I was raised by alternative music.
Right.
Like again, quote unquote, like whatever college rock, alternative, whatever it was. By the time it got to me, it was already, it was considered a genre, which it never really was. There was no genre of alternative music. It was just a way of being like anything that's not, you know, Guns N' Roses or
right
indie or whatever. And
yeah, it was so, yeah. The bands that that you would see at Lollapalooza when it was a touring festival. What was the other one? There was another festival that's still, well, no festivals exist this summer.
Was it in Chicago?
It would have been in Chicago. There was a festival I went to in San Francisco. Say that again.
Noise Pop?
No.
That was in San Francisco. They moved to Chicago. And then obviously Pitchfork. I think I know what you're talking about. It's driving me crazy.
This was one it was a touring festival, like Lollapalooza used to be a touring festival.
At Lilith Fair.
Right. Lilith Fair was all the women.
And Horde Fest, which was like the Dave Matthews.
Horde Fest was my first concert ever.
We had a few. I mean, Chicago had all of these. Like there was one that I can't remember that was like my friend and I were talking about last week. And it was like a ridiculous lineup. Like a bunch of like the bands that were like considered alt country in like 99, 2000.
Yeah.
So like Wilco was still like alt country.
Yeah.
I can't remember the name of it, but like, yeah, that was like in Chicago also, like we had the benefit of having Q101. So Q101 would have like Twisted Christmas and they would have just all these ridiculous. So like, I think I saw like The Cure and Bjork and the same. I saw like ridiculous shows because of Q101.
We had Deer Creek was where like you would see live music in Indianapolis. Like that was the festival, the summer festival or summer concert series were at Deer Creek. And then like Fireside was still really big when I was in college. I graduated college in 99 and I never got there for a show.
Oh, yeah.
Like it was always like on the board, like on my vision board of wanting, I always wanted to go there. And I never got there while it was still Fireside.
I mean, I spent more nights at Fireside than I did, honestly, any house throughout my teens. I mean, Fireside was like my literal home. I was there. Anytime it was like, hey, there's a show at Fireside, I'd be like, let's go. I'll go.
Just, yep.
I got $5. That's all that matters. And then I worked the bar door there for a while too. And that was kind of fun. I wasn't even 21 yet. they didn't know.
Right. Well, like they've been seeing you for years. So you must have turned 21 by then.
Yeah. They just figured. Yeah.
Yeah.
I always looked a lot older than I. Yeah, that was it. I always say like being born in 80, I think was such a blessing because I don't know, you just don't really have to, I didn't have to plant my flag into anything. Like to me, Pavement was punk rock for a while and then they were indie rock and then people would define them as alternative rock and I'd be like, whatever, I just like Pavement.
Yeah.
And that was always just sort of, yeah, by the time I was 20, I was like noise and ambient stuff and it was terrible. Nobody liked me when I was 20.
Oh man. And what do you What are you listening to today?
Today, let's see, I'm looking at my Spotify right now. I was listening to Dan Deacon, who I think started out more like kind of weird, loud, like glitchy indie rock stuff in the early aughts. And he's kind of gotten more into composing stuff. Funny enough, I actually started making, and I might be writing something about this. I started making this playlist for no reason whatsoever called Teenage Skate Video. And it's basically just like trying to remember all the stuff my friends and I would put on to VHS movies that we would make of us skating.
Yeah.
Some of it I'm pretty sure we did put on, and then other stuff, I think I'm just kind of, it's wishful thinking. So it's just like everything from like the Far Side to KRS-One and Beastie Boys, and then a lot of punk stuff, and it's kind of great.
I am cleaning out my guest bedroom and found again my box of mixtapes from college. And so I started just making transferring them to Spotify. Mm-hmm. And they are like, I found one that I made at the end of studying abroad. So it was 1998 and I was coming back from Argentina and I was very sad to be for my semester to be ending. So I made a mixtape based on mixtapes that friends had given me to take to study abroad with about like the end of the semester. And it is such sad sack 90s music.
Yeah. That's the thing I like about 90s music, especially like stuff you would hear on the radio. Like you would hear like Dishwalla. I was listening to Dishwalla a few, like that song came on Spotify. Like that's the band that's like, tell me all your thoughts on God. Like there was right. Like really vague songs about God in the 90s.
Yeah.
That I'm always like, I'm like, well, are you trying to be really deep or are you actually like trying to say something? Yeah, that was always kind of funny to me. And then like, obviously coming from my background, then like when sort of like this like influx of like Christian punk bands kind of started popping up, that really kind of took me by surprise.
Yeah.
I wasn't really ready for that.
For a number of years, I've timed When Harry Met Sally to align with Midnight.
One of my favorite. I watched that movie at the start of fall. That's one of my favorite movies ever. So I watch it at least once a year. But that's like for me, it's like, but I like the New Year's part, but I feel like it's such a.
Like because they meet each other in the fall?
Yeah, it just, I have really good memories of coming to New York around that time when I was a little kid. In the fall and just thinking it was the most beautiful place I'd ever seen.
Yeah.
So just kind of reminds me of something from my childhood. And I just, Nora Ephron's one of my idols. So.
When do you think you saw it for the first time?
Honestly, I must've been like 10.
I mean, it was whoa, on like, that's young.
Yeah. It was like on HBO or something.
Yeah.
I was just always really into, I just always like that kind of stuff. I mean, my grandparents, my Nana especially, like, you know, she just liked movies and we'd watch. I got to watch a lot of movies as a kid. And
yeah.
I watched it with her. I think I was around 9 or 10 because it was either on VHS or it was on like when it first, I think it was on VHS. We rented it, I think. I thought it was HBO, but now I'm not so sure, but yeah, I watched it when I was like 9 or 10 and I liked it. I liked it automatically. And my family didn't really put any restrictions on me.
Yeah.
So that's why I think nothing shocks me.
I didn't see it until college.
Oh, wow.
I saw it, but probably my freshman year, definitely at a time when I like had a crush on a guy friend that I was like, well, obviously I'll just wait 10 years.
Yeah.
That's how it's supposed to work.
That works.
Not a great plan, but it served me for a few years, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely saw Sleepless in Seattle, like right when it premiered on HBO, which I think was like 1993, I want to say. So I've definitely like kind of, I stayed on top of Nora Ephron. I mean, I saw one of my favorite movies of all time is My Blue Heaven, which she wrote. She didn't direct it, I don't think. But I saw that when it came out. I saw it in the theater with, I think, one of my parents. But Steve Martin and Rick Moranis. Great. It's, I don't know why I still, it's like one of those movies. That and Beetlejuice.
Beetlejuice is amazing.
Yeah. And Ghostbusters.
Yep.
Those are the non-John Hughes movies I could watch pretty much any day of the week.
Yeah, Beetlejuice was, we watched a lot. I feel like Beetlejuice and Edward Scissorhands were in high rotation with each other.
See, I never loved Edward Scissorhands as much as Beetlejuice because, I don't know, there was just something about it that, I think it was like the setting just felt so like familiar with like the suburbs and all that stuff.
But yeah.
Like Beetlejuice kind of felt like, I don't know, it was like in the country. And I mean, all the design stuff. And I mean, I had Winona Ryder was definitely like one of my first crushes. Like her and Lisa Bonet were like my first two crushes. And then maybe Annie Potts too. She was another one. But yeah, I still think it's visually like a really interesting and striking film. And I think Edward Scissorhands is a really cool looking film for a lot of reasons. I always felt like Batman and Beetlejuice were Tim Burton's best looking movies.
Did you get to see Beetlejuice when it was on Broadway?
No, I didn't want to. I'm always kind of, it wasn't made for Broadway. I'm not really sure I want to see it.
Yeah.
You know, so like if I want to see something on Broadway, I'll see a Broadway show.
Yeah.
Like we saw Fiddler on the Roof in Yiddish and like that was.
I heard it was amazing.
Yeah, it was. And then like, you know, some of your like, that like, I don't know, some old Tin Pan Alley person wrote, I'll go see that on Broadway.
Yeah.
Broadway is one of those really depressing experiences because it's fixed in our, like, it's, at least for me, it's fixed in this like, you're supposed to get dressed up and it's supposed to be, but then it's just like all these tourists in their shorts and people talking and checking their phones. And
yeah.
Like, why do we pay $200 for this?
So right.
It bums me out a little bit.
Well, I have a Broadway in Chicago subscription. So I see a lot of touring shows for the last few years, which has been nice.
Chicago has like a real theater scene.
Yeah.
You can't, it's pretty much untouchable.
Yeah. And it's the nice thing about getting the subscription was I actually went to shows instead of feeling like, oh, it's another thing I didn't do. And then my friends have gotten better. Like now more people know I actually do want to go to theater. So I get a few more invitations to actually go and see shows.
Yeah. I didn't see like, yeah, I feel like this is like one of those like generation defining things. I didn't see Hamilton. Like I really didn't want to.
Yeah.
But I feel like I'm like, I got enough hearing people talk about Hamilton and people singing Hamilton on the train.
Sure.
I get it. It sounds great. You know, I just don't want to, yeah. I don't want to be like the 20th generation of people who've seen Hamilton.
Yeah.
I just didn't need to see it. But, you know,
I did.
I saw Waiting for Godot. Everyone. I'm like the one. But like we saw like Waiting for Godot when it was Jean-Luc Picard and Magneto. The buddies from X-Men.
Ian McKellen?
Yeah, Patrick Stewart. And that was great. That was a lot of fun.
I saw what's the like 24 hours in Israel one, the band's visit when it was still off Broadway with Tony Shalhoub.
Yeah.
He was phenomenal. That was like before it went to Broadway, it was in a tiny little theater.
Is he playing a Jewish character?
No, he's playing an Arab character.
He can get away with it. I'm fine with it.
Yeah, he could. Well, he plays Jewish on Maisel and Arab in The Band's Visit.
I don't know. There's always something I feel like I regret not seeing, like maybe one or two things a year. Maybe one day when we're allowed to go out, maybe I'll rectify that.
Yeah, I will. When we're allowed to go out again, I think I won't be so cavalier about turning down plans.
Yeah. I've been thinking about like what I'm going to do. I mean, now I'm starting to, now I'm like less inclined to think about what I'm going to do whenever. But I definitely like the first few months of quarantine thought about that a good deal. So
yeah.
Now I'm sort of just like, you know what? I'm just glad I don't have to get on the subway every day.
Yeah.
Thankful for that little thing and trying to go from there.
Yeah. Today we got an email to say that we can work from home until June of 2021.
Wow.
Yeah. And so they were just like, we're just going to go ahead and tell you now that until June of 2021, you're under no pressure. You're under no pressure to come back to the office so you can make plans for the school year.
Yeah. I'm noticing a lot of people are leaving or not coming back to New York. I mean, when we moved into our new apartment 2 months ago, like I was telling you before we went on, and we needed to get some guys to come in and take a bunch of the old, like the stuff from our old apartment. And they were like junk luggers basically.
Yeah.
And my wife was telling me it was like, I think it was like $70 an hour then. And now it's like, I think because they're in such high demand, it's like 170 an hour.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Cause we needed a couch removed and everyone's leaving. It's wild.
Like, what's the point of living in Manhattan without Broadway, without restaurants, without bars, without blind dates?
I mean, that's why I think Brooklyn, at least my part of Brooklyn, you know, like when you go up to Williamsburg, it's different. But where I live in Brooklyn, I think it's more neighborhoody.
Yeah.
So I think people are just more like, we live here. This is where we live. We, you know. We don't need somebody to distract us. I would love to go to a museum. I would kill for it, but you know, just to break up the monotony of the day to day. But you know, this is where I live. I'm not going to be able to do anything else anymore anywhere else. So yeah, we have a couple of friends who are, I think, like a 15-minute walk, and then my sisters-in-law also live nearby, so they come over. And I mean, we have a rooftop to ourselves, and I'm like it feels like we have a house with a backyard because it's so quiet back there and it's so big. So we grill up there pretty much every couple of nights and just chill out. It's like super, it's like life, it's really saved our lives, this having that kind of like place to just go and not think about anything for an hour or two.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes a huge difference. We have a shared backyard in our building and some of the guys are gardening. A lot of the toddlers are playing in different sprinkler setups every night. So it's really nice to have, I don't know how people are doing this who don't have, so I don't know how you live alone and you don't have a pet in this.
Yeah.
Tell me about the book that's coming out.
The book, it's about the suburbs. And it kind of goes back to your question about like earlier about stuff I like. I mean, it basically was like an excuse to try to figure out why pretty much everything I like comes from the suburbs in a lot of ways. Like, I like a lot of stuff. Like, I'm a very curious person, and I just kind of got to this point where I was like, you know, besides like the Ramones and the Velvet Underground and like hip hop, like pretty much everything I like is suburban. And I just wanted to kind of drill down into that, like why these places that so many of us come from, but also kind of hate on.
Yeah.
So much. And it was just like a really interesting way for me. You know, the book is about trying to like figure out like why the suburbs are the way they are, but in a lot of ways also it's like trying to figure out like why personally on a personal level, like why I relate to this stuff so much. You know, like why I can always watch David Lynch films, or why I could not listen to the Arcade Fire album, The Suburbs, for 5 years after it came out, and then listen to it for the first time and be like, oh, I love this album. I get this. You know, because the themes are all very universal, I think, to anybody who grows up in America, but anybody who grows up in the suburbs, especially.
Because you, and it seemed like you did a fair amount of travel back here for it. Like, did you go, you didn't go around the whole, all of Lake Michigan, did you?
That was for a totally different article. I'd always wanted to do that. And I just, you know, when we're allowed to travel, I travel a lot for work. I write about traveling and sometimes, and, or I get sent on, stories. I've been lucky enough to go to a lot of cool places for work, but that one, I just told my boss, I'm like, I've always wanted to just drive around Lake Michigan. Cause I always tell people when they ask, like, what part of Chicago did you grow up in? I just always say I'm from Skokie, but I grew up on the lake.
Yeah.
Because honestly, like, that's really the closest, the easiest way to put it. Cause I did, I grew up, you know, Evanston, Lake Forest. I lived, went to Sagaga and Highland Park when I was a kid. And, you know, I just, my whole, like, everything in the Chicagoland area goes, traces back to water.
Yeah.
Like, we had a house when I was a kid also in like McHenry County, and it was right on Fox Lake. And so, yeah, water is like very important to me, but, yeah, I went, but I decided I wanted to see all of Lake Michigan. So I literally, in November just drove along the lake, and it was really awesome.
Are things open in November to do that drive?
When you hit around St. Joe, and when you hit around the border of Indiana and Michigan, you start realizing, like, I grew up going to that part of Michigan when I was a kid for fishing, and I've never really seen it that shut down, but it's really shut down, and it's pretty intense.
Right.
And you know, the Indiana dunes are kind of shut down pretty much. Like, no one's hanging out by the dunes when it's 20 degrees out. But I'm a glutton for punishment.
I mean, yeah, the hotel rooms were probably cheaper. It's probably an affordable way to hit the hotels, but I don't know where you're eating.
Yeah. I actually had thought of that too. Like, cause I know it's weird. I know that part of the Midwest well enough, cause I grew up traveling a lot, playing hockey. So I know like Michigan and Wisconsin fairly well. And I know the culture. So like, I knew, like, I forget the name of the town I stayed in the first night. It had a very German name. It was like Upper Lower Peninsula. Like, I was like an hour and a half maybe away from the Upper Peninsula. And, you know, there was like two or three things open. I ate pizza, and I knew the next day, like, I was going to find a pasty, you know, this little, basically like Michigan kind of like,
I feel empanadas. Like,
what's that?
Like a Michigan empanada.
Yeah, sort of. Yeah. I feel like I'm mispronouncing it, and somebody from the Upper Peninsula is going to. Yeah, but I think it's a pasty.
Like a Cornish pasty, right?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
And all the places were closed. Like, for like, once you hit the Upper Peninsula, everything is just shut down. And finally, like, an hour into my drive, I find one place, and she's got like all kinds of smoked fish and venison pasties. I'm like, yes, this is
awesome.
This is basically like my happy spot. So I ate pretty well. Made it to, let's see, I drove the entire Upper Peninsula in one day, made it to Wisconsin, my hotel in Wisconsin, not long after like about an hour after sundown, which kind of got a little scary. Northern Wisconsin is kind of scary because there's no lights on the highway. I was taking a lot of back roads too. I ate lake fish at a hotel. And I stayed in Milwaukee the next night, and you can't go wrong in Milwaukee. So, yeah, I ate pretty well. I always eat well. That's sort of both my one virtue and also my greatest problem.
It's a strength and a weakness.
Yeah, exactly. I always know where to eat.
Where are your go-tos in the city, in this city, in Chicago?
In Chicago, honestly, I feel like this is, I mean, like the nicer places, I always like going to Long Man Eagle. There's something kind of nice about that place because I remember when it was like a brothel.
Okay.
There, like 98.
Yeah.
It was, so it's kind of nice that that's there, but I've also just, I like the people and I like the food and I've kind of gotten to know everybody. And I like the Publican. You know, Publican is a nice vibe. It's kind of weird going to that area for food because I remember going there to get like stuff from my family's restaurant when I was a kid. And
right.
Just like dudes and bloodied up, like,
yeah.
Just washing like pig and
just down the sewer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that place. But I mean, I always tell like Calumet Fisheries is, that's an important place to me because used to go fishing not too far from there when I was a kid with my grandpa. And that's always kind of great to go back to. And I'm glad it's become like this, like iconic.
Yeah.
Sort of, you know, and I go to Candlelight in Rogers Park.
So good. They have the best garlic fries.
I'm really happy that place has expanded. You know, it's, and then, you know, I don't have a Harold's, but whenever anybody asks me where to eat in Chicago, like, where should I get deep dish? I'm like, just go to Harold's.
Yeah.
Like Harold's is to me, like Harold's, you go down to, Maxwell Street, you get Mexican food down there. You go find one of those. What is the thing that the tamale and chili, the mother-in-law, you ever had one of those? They put like a hot dog bun. It's really messed up.
Yeah. Not the Chicago elotes. No.
I don't know.
Elotes is corn.
There's literally something called a mother-in-law.
Oh.
That I think is, you know, like, there's a, I think it's like a Polish tamale. You know, like the Polish people that like, there's a Polish family that like made their own tamales. They're the frozen. I'm probably screwing this up. But I think it's like a tamale, like drenched in chili. You're going to have somebody listen to this and they're going to.
Somebody's shouting at their podcast app right now, telling us what they are.
Yeah. But like that's like something I would tell. I'm like, go find a bar that the tamale guy. Cause like that was a big thing when I lived there was the guys with tamales that would show up.
He's opening a storefront.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah. The tamale guy was like that saved my life so many times.
He's saved more life than the Chicago police for sure.
I'm sure. Yeah. I mean, I always end up in Logan Square. I think there's that coffee shop called like Gaslight or Gas Lamp or something like that. I always end up going there when I get into town and have a coffee in the Topo Chico. That's kind of a, now you can get Topo Chico anywhere, but you used to not be able to get it here. So yeah, there's so many places. I mean, it's just Chicago. I always tell people, I'm like, LA gets away with being a great food city because it's so many different cities in one place.
Right.
Like it's by default going to be a great food city. And I'm not in any way, shape or form saying you're going to eat really well in LA. New York is really great, but New York changes. You can't, it's just not a sustainable place.
Right.
Like food trends change. But Chicago, there's sort of this staying power. That's why I think I can kind of get more invested in certain restaurants and places there. I don't know if that's, I think that's kind of changing now. Like what Blackbird, I think, just closed.
Yeah.
That was shocking.
Yeah. And that's been, it's been open at least 20 years, I think.
It's been a while.
Yeah.
But, you know, the food culture in Chicago is, it's really incredible. And I mean, when I took my wife to Chicago for the first time and she just got like the small salad and they brought the small salad out, she was like, what the hell is this? I'm like, yeah. She's like, well, I can see why this is where you're from.
Right.
You know, then I took her to Portillo's and I got two hot dogs and a beef. And she could like take one bite of the hot dog and she's like, I can't do this. This is too much. And I'm like, okay, I just ate everything. And that's what I do. That's, I show up and I eat everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many places. If I could, if I had a little bit more time to think about that, but I always say Harold's. Harold's is the place everybody should go to.
Yeah.
It's the best of Chicago. They're all black owned. That's cool. I think. And is one of the greatest inventions. And every one of them tastes different. So every Harold's is kind of different.
Yeah.
Also Al's Deli in Evanston, that's rules.
Yeah, it does.
Another good one.
Yeah. Well, Jason, this has been super fun. So the Sprawl is coming out August 25th. Is that right?
Yep, that's correct.
And people should buy it from their local bookstores. Mm-hmm. And so The Sprawl, Reconsidering the Weird American Suburbs. It's a book of essays.
Like, I shouldn't have, I pushed against calling it a book of essays, but yeah, it kind of is.
Well, actually, it just says it's an essay by Jason Diamond. It doesn't say it's a book of essays.
It's a thing. It's a whole thing.
Is there anything else that you'd like to promote or to, how can people follow you on social media or?
I am Jason Diamond on Twitter, on Instagram. Yeah. I think it's a fun ride when you follow me.
It is a fun ride. I can verify that. I have been following you for 10 years at least. So, which is weird. I think weird.
I think you verifying that is better than a blue check mark.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I will see you online.
Thank you, Leah.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Finding Favorites with Leah Jones. Please make sure to subscribe and drop us a 5-star review on iTunes. Now, go out and enjoy your favorite things.